Welcome to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard as he heads into the stretch run for re-election to the office of mayor. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Mayor Ballard, welcome to the program. It's good to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be here. Thank you.
In some ways, incumbents, I know, are supposed to have advantages when they run for office, but in some ways the argument that an incumbent has to make for retaining office is a little more complicated than a challenger does. Challenger really just has to say, this is why the incumbent shouldn't be reelected, this is why I'm okay. An incumbent's sort of got to defend the first 4 years, lay out a plan for the next 4 years, and also say, and by the way, the alternative you've got out there is not as good as me. So you've got a three-prong thing. Could we start with the argument? Could you argue why the past 4 years have been
success? Sure, absolutely. Well, let's go back to 2007. Understand where we were at that point in time. The city was really in a lot of angst. People were in an uproar. A couple years before, they had passed a budget with blank pages, seven blank pages on it. In 2007, people were locked out of the city county building for a budget hearing. Budget committee meetings were full. People providing input, people were in an uproar about property taxes. The previous year in 2006, crime was absolutely off the charts. I mean, there was a lot of angst in the city, and people weren't really sure which direction the city was going to go. They borrowed $100 million to pay for 3 years of operating expenses at the end of 2005, and we're paying that off until 2021 now, $9 million a year until 2021. And that money's long gone. It was paid for 3 years of operating expenses. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing that was going on in the city, and I think people knew about it, and they weren't comfortable. You may remember my yard signs at that time said, had enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, and really that was kind of the feeling that was going on in the city at that time. So what we've done, I was talking last night to a group, and really all the indicators are going in the right direction. We're fiscally stable. We're not borrowing. We're not raising taxes. In fact, property taxes, on average, are down by a third. We gave back some income tax, about $6 million in income tax. Despite the fact that we have declining revenues, we've been able to make the budget work over the last 4 years without borrowing, without raising taxes. I'm sure a lot of your audience knows that when we came into office, their numbers, not ours, their numbers said a $170 million projected deficit in 2012. And that was before property tax caps. That was before property tax caps and before the recession. So we've made this work on a level that, we were on in emergency surgery right away, and so we had to take a lot of action. Everybody wants more resources, but you only have what you have. And so we've been able to craft all of this in a way to maintain, we have these AAA bond ratings. There's so many good things going on in the city that I can talk about, and I will talk about. But I want to go back to all these indicators. So we're fiscally stable, one of very few cities of large cities across the nation have AAA bond ratings from all three rating agencies. That means a lot of people want to invest in our city. This is a stable place to invest. And I'll give you a few examples of what's happening in the city. And I would tell you this would be a dramatic story in a good national economy, but obviously we don't have that. But look at the investment that's going on in our city right now. Wishard or Eskenazi Health. You can look at the IU Health Neuroscience Center. You can look at Cityway downtown. You can look at 16 Tech, which is where the old Bush Stadium. We're going to have a high-tech life sciences corridor there. You can look at Rebuild Indy. You can look at the Marion University School of Medicine. These are all six huge construction projects going on across the city right now. Absolutely massive construction projects going on and capital projects that will increase the economic development of our city. That is very important in this very difficult national economy that's happening. In addition to all that, we have two area redevelopment going on, the Near East Side Legacy Project, which is about $50 to $60 million on the 10th Street corridor, and we have the Avondale Meadows, which is a $150 million project that's going on in the city. Two huge neighborhood project redevelopments. I'm not sure that happens in a good economy, But here we are in a difficult national economy, and people from the outside are saying, you know what, Indianapolis is a good place to invest. We can make a difference there. So we have these six huge construction projects, plus many, many smaller ones. We have two area redevelopment projects going on in the city of Indianapolis. We're keeping a lot of people working at this point in time, and all this would not be possible unless the city was fiscally stable and they trusted what was happening in our city. And so, I think that's a tremendous success story. And now let's move on to a couple other indicators that we talk about. You know, I know my opponent says crime is up, but the FBI says something else. It says it's down. It says it's overall down. It continues to go down. Here are the murder rates in our city for the last 5 years. 140, 114, 114, 193. I'd suggest that's the right direction. That's not a coincidence, by the way, because we've created relationships throughout the city to make sure that sort of thing occurs. Where are we right now in this year? We're either even or one up from last year's record number. Last year's number was the lowest in 15 years. Actually, the year before was the lowest in 15 years, and then we beat that again. There's a lot of partnerships that we have created throughout the neighborhoods and through some ministerial groups like the 10-Point Coalition, through Wish's Prescription for Hope, the Youth Violence Reduction Team, which is really an extension of Wish's Prescription for Hope, that are making a big difference in the city of Indianapolis in that regard. And so that continues to go down. The graduation rate, even though I don't claim to have jurisdictional authority over the 11 school districts, but I think the competition, I think the heightened sense of accountability, which I think I've been a part of, has taken our graduation rate, high school graduation rate, from 68 to 82% in the city. So that's going in the right direction. So you can see, the infrastructure, should I even talk about infrastructure in the city? I mean, it's so strong. We just had a press conference on this earlier. We traditionally do about 70 lane miles a year. In the last 16 months, as of the end of this year, in the 16 months, 580 lane miles. 580. Please, there's a good story here. And so sidewalks, 5 miles a year traditionally. We've done over 100 miles in the last 4 years. Bridges, we traditionally do about 2 to 3 a year. Between this year and next year, we'll do 27 bridges. I mean, there's and those are public safety issues. In addition to, I mean, it's not just infrastructure, public safety, the connectivity throughout the city with the bike lanes and the expansion of the trails, creating that type of city where young men and women want to live in. There's the piece, the global piece. We really were not reaching out across the world despite this burgeoning global economy, and we were sitting still. But we've created relationships with three of the largest emerging economies in the world, Brazil, India, and China. So that wasn't being done before. We had no relationships there. I mean, there's so much going on so many levels that has changed from 2007. And you can tell, and here's exactly what I'm, and here's why I know people are calm. They mm-hmm. trust what the city is going on. When I went back to 2007, when I was talking about 2007, people being locked out of the city county building, budget committee hearings full, all that sort of thing. This year, we had two budget committee meetings. There were 10 people there, and less than half of them were there to talk about the budget because they trust what's going on in the city now. It is moving forward. People understand what's happening in the city now. We've been very open about everything with the 43 mayor's night outs. And the outreach has been very, very strong. And so, you know, when you look at the entire movement of the city over the past few years, it's a different ballgame. And that's why... do you have to defend that record? I'll defend that record.
Well, and I guess where I was going is the second part of the question really is the next 4 years, what are the priorities? Is it going to be institutionalizing the changes that you've made, or are there new initiatives, new places you'd like to
There's a few things we need to do. I think institutionalizing the changes are very important. For instance, the police reforms. I'm very afraid that the police reforms will go away. This is very important to the city of Indianapolis, and I'll give you an example of this. I talk about this thing called the personnel continuum with the police department, the recruiting, the training, the performance-based evaluations, and the promotions. Now, maybe your audience doesn't know this, but there were no performance evaluations until I became the mayor. Now, with 23 years in the Marine Corps, I know that's wrong. High-performing organizations do not do that sort of thing, but we did. Not anymore. Mm-hmm. Now they have performance evaluations. That does two things for us. One, those who are not quite up to par are getting the remedial help that they need, which is good. Usually they were just cast aside. That doesn't happen anymore. Now they're getting help. In addition to that, you have to have some sort of you have to be in some sort of category, a higher category, to even be eligible for promotion. That was not true in the past. Anybody could have been up for promotion in the past. Is that really in the best interest of the city or the police department? I don't think so. So we have merit-based promotions now. I can't have the city can't afford to have those changes go away. The other thing with the police department, we instituted the Leadership Academy, a four-week, very rigorous, academically oriented school that teaches them critical thinking skills and problem-solving skills, and it really changes a lot of people's, not only their approach to policing, but also their approach to life. I've had people tell me it really changed the way they look at things like husband and father, and that sort of also very rigorous activity. Those are the sorts of things that we brought to the table. We need to institutionalize those. That's why, and this vocal minority in the police department that, voted the other way, that's fine. If that cost me a political endorsement, that's fine. But
and I think
these
we've got
changes,
a caller with a question on that.
Those changes have to stick. Mm-hmm. It's important for the city because I know what this should look like. So there are things like that that have to stick. There are other, the process improvement thought process that we brought to the city called Six Sigma, that has to stay. I mean, the relationships within the community has to stay. The infrastructure improvements, we want to continue the infrastructure improvements because that's what we heard on 43 Mayor's Night Out. Mm-hmm. That's what we heard. People want their roads. They want their sidewalks. They want all that. They've been crying for this for decades. And our developing team, what they've been doing and reaching out not only across the nation but across the world, really helping tell the story, a perfect story, is Kronos, which we just announced last week. It's not as many jobs as we've announced in the past. It was 250. But it's a good, high-paying IT jobs, and 250 is a pretty good number, frankly. But Kronos was not even looking at Indianapolis originally. They were looking at all the cities on the eastern half of the United States, generally speaking, and they came here kind of as a courtesy. But then they said, well, something's going on here. We got down to the final 10. We got the final 4, final 2. Then I went over and talked to them, and they said, Indianapolis is the place we want to be. And that's a Boston-based company that said Indianapolis is the place we want to be. These are the sorts of things that we want to continue in the city, because we just can't go back to the way it used to be. So, there's institutionalizing. Are there other things we need to do? Absolutely, there are, and the things we want to do. One front being the Neighborhood Resource Center at the west wing of the market. I mean, that's going to be help neighborhoods realize their vision of what they want to be, and that's going to happen soon.
Bethany, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mayor, for being here. I was I don't really follow politics very much, but I've heard you say that you weren't surprised to not get the FOP endorsement, and I was just wondering why that was.
Good question. Thanks for calling, Bethany.
Yeah, I was not surprised at all, to be honest with you. We knew it kind of going in when I went over to talk to them. But because there is a vocal minority who wants to take the police department back to the way it used to be, I will tell you that's not the majority of the police. They like the fact that we are investing in their training. They very much appreciate the Leadership Academy. They also very much appreciate the new sergeants and lieutenants training. Sergeants and lieutenants training used to be a couple of days of here's the paperwork, go forth and prosper. We don't do that anymore. Now it's 8 to 10 days of training to teach people how to work together. We take them out to different community groups. We've talked to so many people about that. But they go out and talk to so many people. Believe me, the performance evaluations and the merit-based promotion and everything, that's, not everybody wants that. Not everybody wants that, but that is extremely important to have that. And so if raising the standards, and now we have a professional standards division, that's actually what it's called, raising the standards, revising the general orders, getting merit-based promotions and all of that, if that costs me the political endorsement, that's okay to me because the police have told me, they come up and talk to me all the time, the vast majority of the police will be voting for me. I don't think there's any question about that whatsoever.
We are talking with Mayor Greg Ballard here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. We've gotten another question about the police that I'm going to kind of group an email question from Rick Worcester, and I'll paraphrase. It says, basically, IMPD in the past several years has lost public faith. You've talked some about the ways that you've tried to improve performance review and all of that. Are there further steps you want to take if reelected to clean up IMPD?
Well, those are ongoing because this is something that we've been concentrating on since 2008. We started pretty early in on this. This is something I knew that had to change. Even I was shocked at some of the things. I was stunned to learn that they had no leadership training in the police department. This is largely a 1,600 to 1,700 member paramilitary organization, and they never studied leadership or never taught leadership to their folks. Wow. Now, I got to tell you, I was stunned. I was really stunned at that. Because you know, the Marine Corps and every other military service and every other groups like this, they teach that from day one. But we weren't doing that sort of thing. So those will continue. Those have to continue into the future. The general orders are still in the process of being revised, and some of them conflict, and we want to make sure that those are right. The standards were raised. We raised the standards on alcohol and that sort of thing. The standards continue to rise. That's the important point. And I'm here to tell you, the vast majority of police understand what we're trying to do, and they want those standards to go up. They understand because everybody wants to be proud of their organization. As I say in my book, number one reality is everybody wants to be on a good team. If you continue to improve the team, everybody gets prouder of their team, and that's what's going to happen.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard as he faces the voters once again here in just a few short weeks. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Milton, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me access.
Certainly.
And I appreciate the mayor making himself available for comment. If I could, just very briefly, Mr. Mayor, I wanted to thank you for not running a negative campaign. It's refreshing to see a person run on their record rather than trying to run on their ability to criticize.
Thank you.
I'm sure it'll stand you well in the voters' eyes. Basically, my question to you is, would you be willing to establish a cap or a limit on the number of illegal aliens we have roaming around the city? Unfortunately, Indianapolis kind of became a stop on the Underground Railroad for getting access into our economy. We had some people down at the license branch that were taking money under the table to generate credentials, and I believe that's been cleaned up and stopped, but unfortunately, the situation got totally out of control before it really got exposed. What can we do to go ahead and make sure that we're all starting off on the same foot and we do something to go ahead and thin out the illegal population in our town?
Thanks for the question, Milton. We'll take it up.
Yeah, I usually like to direct things head on, but in this case, I know you probably don't want to hear this, but this is really more of a federal issue than anything else, and there's only and the enforcement mechanisms there are light in every state, not just Indiana. Not only Indianapolis, but other municipalities across the state and really across the country, local municipalities do not have the resources to really tackle this issue. In some ways, we just have to deal with the issue when we come across this, and then we refer them to the ICE agents, and then it's up to them. So that's all we can do at that point in time. But frankly, there are, for the population that you're talking about, it's the even at that level, the federal enforcement is minimal at best. So we deal with the fallout of those issues at the local level as best as we can, and that's kind of the boat that we're in right now.
We've gotten several email questions and at least one tweet on the issue of mass transit, and I think I'll go with the tweet, which summarizes it the best. Is, can Mayor Ballard give us specifics on his vision for public transit?
Well, that's a great question, because it's going to take a few minutes here, so. A lot of people doing a lot of good things on mass transit, for the last few years. I talk about 20 years that people have been studying this, and good people in the MPO, and I really doing good things, and I understand that on a number of levels. But the enhanced mass transit that we needed in the region just was not moving forward at the clip that it needed to move forward. So this is about 6 or 7 months into my administration in 2008. I went to the business community. And I went to a couple folks, and I said, listen, and this is exactly what I said. I said, we're not going to get there in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. That's what I told them. And we have to come up with something. And I suggested that we need to rally around a plan. We need to have some bit here and a little bit there. So that's how IndyConnect was started. IndyConnect came out in its first iteration, got a lot of public input over a lot of months, got a lot of great input, changed their plan, and they're in process now of gathering input or putting together that input. I'm not sure quite where right now, but and then they will come out with a final plan. Now, this because as regionally, to me, this is about creating the type of city where young men and women live and where companies want to move to. We must have more of that. That's a piece of it. Also, you know, the connectivity piece that we're trying with trails and bike lanes, alternative modes of transportation, along with the mass transit, all these kind of work together. So that this is what we've been trying to do with IndyConnect. All that said, it has to have a rate of return on it. I told the IndyConnect folks very early on that this is not just about traffic mitigation. This is about economic development. There must be economic development surrounding any enhanced mass transit that we come up with. I believe that. IndyConnect believes that. And the state legislature believes that. So all three are kind of in sync that there has to be some sort of study done on whatever the final plan is, that this is going to enhance the economic development in the region. So we are at the point now where we can go to the State House and say, because we need their help. We just can't do it by ourselves. But this, you got to understand, this is my initiative. And mm-hmm. So if you want somebody to go to the State House, you got to think about that. Just on a political basis, think about that, especially considering the makeup of the State House right now, which is pretty much all Republican, with the House, Senate, and the governor. So it's my intent to go over there and talk to them about that, and we already have talked to them about it, frankly. And what we need is a governance change. We need a central Indiana governing body, if you will. We need a referendum the ability to conduct a referendum county by county. That was always the intent. And we want to do that. You know, for instance, Hamilton County has to do their own. Hendricks County, Johnson County, Marion County. Of course, none of this makes any sense unless Marion County goes that way, mm-hmm. right? I mean, otherwise it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I want the people to be able to decide that particular issue. And, of course, there's going to be a funding mechanism. So there has to be all these things kind of have to come together. And I've been very upfront that we need to get this in the next couple of years over at the State House. Or else we might have to go back to square one. But the State House knows exactly what we're talking about. The key people over there know what we're looking for from them. And I'm hoping that that we get the right resolutions over the State House. I plan to go talk to some folks from different parts of Indiana to make sure they understand that, you know, the mayor of Indianapolis wants the people to have the ability to decide for themselves here in Marion County and in Hamilton County and other our surrounding counties, that they have the ability to decide for themselves. And I'm hoping that they'll give that to us. And that'll have to happen here shortly. I think we got some good momentum on it. The business community is certainly behind it. I'm glad I initiated it. Some people were mad at me. Some people were happy with me that I kind of interceded in that process. But I just thought we needed a rally around a plan, and so we came up with a plan. The IndyConnect folks came up with a plan, and that's where we are.
Would you support a tax increase for that
depends.
Purpose?
You know, it depends.
On what?
There's different things. And I always talk to people about this. You're also talking to the guys who saved $740 million on the reengineering. Mm-hmm. So there are different ways of cutting this done. But the people will decide. I mean, this is going to be in the people's hands. I mean, that's what this is going to be. Now, will I be talking about it? Absolutely. I initiate it. I obviously want something to come out of this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the design, build, operate, maintain model, where the public-private partnerships intersect will have to be decided. But, you know, there's always different ways of cutting that. For instance, the IndyConnect folks think a sales tax might be the best. But, we'll see. There are different ways of cutting that pie, and we'll just have to see.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about his vision for the city and his discussion of the past 4 years. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
Yes, I just had a brief clarification to ask of Mayor Greg Ballard. When he said that the property tax, by and large, on average, has been cut by a third. Was he talking about that he's taken action to get legislation passed to lower the property rate, or is that by and large because the property value in Indianapolis has decreased over the last couple of years?
Thanks for the question, Tom.
Yeah, that was done largely because of the property tax caps, which I went over to the State House and lobbied for. It was a state action, but there were only two mayors that I know of that were out front of this. That was Wayne Siebold up in Marion and myself. And I went over to the State House and said, look, people need a consistent and predictable climate in which to live. Clearly, in 2007, people did not feel there was a consistent and predictable climate. There's no question about that whatsoever. And I thought, as an economic development tool, if you will, people need that. You not only the homeowners, but also the businesses need to know what their property taxes are going to be from year to year. And I had people, I had businesses tell me the same thing. I was about to lose my business. And because the climate is now stable, that's very important. Did we lose a little bit on assessed value? Yes, but nothing like the property tax caps. And I'm here to tell you, I was in meetings with other mayors, and they're not most of them are not big fan of property tax caps because they think it hurts their ability to gather revenue. But I think it was more important for Indianapolis to have a consistent, predictable climate, not only for the homeowners and people wanting to live in Indianapolis, but also for the businesses who now know what they're going to be on a year-to-year basis. So that's where it was.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send us a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Lindsay sent us a tweet saying, do you support the arts? How can we increase support for the arts in Indy?
I go to so many events, I can't tell you. I particularly go to a lot of the dance events, Dance Kaleidoscope and Gregory Hancock. I go to so many of their events. It's pretty. I love them. And for some reason, early on, I don't know why people thought otherwise. But I spent 23 years in the Marine Corps. I've been around the world. I get the artistic and cultural communities in different places around the world, and I understand it completely. And we've been able to stay. Now, we had to make some budget cuts early on in 2008 because when we came in, the budget deficit that year, I mean, the gap between expected revenues and what was promised out was either $26 or $28 million. I can't remember. I mean, that year. So, like I say, emergency surgery right away. So we took it down to $1 million from where it was, $1.5 million to $1 million. But we've kept it there despite all the property tax caps, despite the declining income tax revenue. We've kept it right there. And I'll tell you exactly why. And we've been able to supplement that. For instance, last year, Immunicipal Corporation was able to give them an additional $300,000. This year, we've been able to fund the 46, which I thought was dramatic. I'm a big mural guy. I love public art. I love murals throughout the city. I was pushing that pretty hard, and I was really pleased that the Arts Council came out with 46 for 46. I thought that was tremendous, and we've been able to find additional funding for that also. But we've been able to keep the funding level where it's been the last 3 years, despite all of this declining revenue. And here's why we do this: because the bigger funders, the more private funders for the arts, want to make sure that the city has some skin in the game. They want to make sure the city understands the value of it. And so it's important for us to keep it at a certain level, supplement it when we can, and when additional folks like I say, some municipal corporations or other folks like the, I think the Super Bowl committee helped out with 46 for 46. If we can keep those things going and supplement as we can, with some fairly big dollars at the same time, I think we'll maintain the status that we can right now. People really need to understand. Some people understand it, but they don't want the government to help with it. Some people don't understand it. So there's different. But my take on this is the government has to have a little bit of skin in the game because of these other large funders. But here's another piece that's really important to us. There's a company called Medco, and they did not come to Indianapolis. They went to Zionsville because the space they were looking for in a particular building was not available in Indianapolis, and so they went just outside. But it was the cultural arts and cultural component of Indianapolis, combined with the sports climate, frankly, that was very important to them. They wanted the whole mix so that the city that they were essentially living in had the entire mix for their employees, and that's what some people do not understand. Some people think we go too far in sports. Some people think we go too far in arts. But I will tell you, they all work together to create the type of climate where people want to live and companies want to come and do business. And we can't forget that all these play together. I'll give you a perfect example. The season sponsor every year for Dance Kaleidoscope is the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, so they intersect all the time, and they support each other all the time.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Your question, please.
3 days a week, I drive my kids to Fisher's to the library because of the library hours that are available to us here in Indianapolis, and I can afford to do that. But Mayor Ballard, do you understand what it's like for poor people when I go to the library and they have no computer access, and the only place that they can get books are at the library? And it just seems to me that the libraries are such an important resource that they can't be defunded the way that you've chose to do. I've heard you've changed that, but it seems to me that in Indianapolis, the Chamber of Commerce gets everything they want from you. The sports teams get everything they want, and poor people really get it stuck to with the libraries. I'm very disappointed in it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Bill.
Yeah, that's not really accurate, to be honest with you. The funding mechanism was not up to us originally. So that was a funding mechanism coming from the state, and we did not choose to defund. It was a property tax issue. What we did do last year was go over to the state and ask the state to allow us to provide income tax revenue to the libraries, which we were not able to do previously, and we were able to do that this year. And we got through the council and passed through the council to do it. So it's not quite legitimate to say that we defunded them. That's not. They were a separate municipal corporation funded by a separate mechanism, and they had to do what they had to do. All that said, my high-performance government team went in to help the library staff craft a way to keep libraries open. They had to cut some hours, but it was my team that went in with the staff and helped with them to make sure that no libraries were being closed overall. So I think we were a big part of keeping those libraries open. And now with the additional revenue that's coming from the income taxes as a part of our lobbying efforts over at the state, more hours are being added to the libraries as a result of that. So we're actually moving the ball back as close to where it was in the past. So and we were not defunding anything. It didn't come from the city to begin with, a city mechanism, if you will. So that's really the truth about that. I'm in libraries a lot. I understand every time I go in the libraries, I see people using the computers all the time. I know they have a lot of people using those computers, and it's very important to them. So I don't want anybody to suggest that we're trying to do to defund libraries. That is exactly the opposite. We're trying to find ways to make sure that they have enough funding as possible.
Well, we're talking sort of about the arts and cultural issues. I gather Saturday night at the Heartland Film Festival, you had to debate your opponent, and you sent your son as a stand-in who did, I gather, a pretty spot-on impersonation/caricature of you with the reading glasses and all of that. I guess what I'd like to ask, and just real briefly, because I know we all want to talk about the issues, is has your family enjoyed this experience of sort of being in the limelight? Is it just something they think they're giving to the community and they'll be glad when it's over?
That's a really good question. I will tell, let me go to that, because I went to the Heartland Film Festival event after the debate.
Yeah.
After the debate, I went over there to it.
Did you see tape of his?
No, I did not, but I intend to. Okay. Jeff Sparks has assured me that he will let me see that because literally everybody I talked to said, boy, your son was unbelievable. It was really funny. I guess he put on the reading glasses or something. Were you there?
No, I was not there. Yeah, I just heard reports.
Apparently he put them on and saying he wanted to give everybody the full mayoral experience. And then we put them on. He couldn't see anything, so he took them off and says, that's not going to work. And so everybody kind of cracked up, I guess, at that point in time. But I heard he did a really good job. And you know, my son's a really good young man. He's 24 years old, very interested in film, and has really done a great job. And that's part of it. Like I say, I went to the Heartland Film Festival after the debate because I like Jeff Sparks and what he does over there. I think that's a tremendous asset to the community. Now, about, are we giving to the, what are we doing? Are we enjoying it? You know, people ask me that all the time. Do you enjoy being the mayor? I said, it depends on the day. But generally speaking, yes, because I do look at this as public service. I spent so much time in the Marine Corps. This is public service to me. You have to go through this political process, unfortunately, to get there. But generally speaking, yes, because this is a really good city. I'm so fortunate to see so many things in the city that the average person does not get to see, which is so many, especially this is what I always say about the best part about being the mayor is, I see good work being done on behalf of others that will never hit the newspaper, will never be in the media. Nobody will talk about it, but I see it. I see this person doing this. I see this local organization doing this, this little neighborhood group doing this. I see that everywhere. It's amazing what happens in our city. I will tell you, my wife is, the financial literacy person in the city now, with the Bank on Indy and the financial coaching and the free tax preparation. We pull all those assets together, and she's pretty well known throughout the city doing that. My son is kind of reaching out. He's not really taking advantage of anything, and I don't want anybody to do that. But I think on some level he probably likes it, but he's a bit like me. I mean, he's probably more. I'm actually introverted. So mm-hmm. So getting out in the line, I don't seek any of this. It's part of the job. You have to do it, and that's fine. And I'm okay with that. And my wife is okay with that also. But it was something. It's just part of the job. And we think we can make a difference in the city. Certainly, my wife, who's doing this financial. There's financial coaching in the jails. I mean, I've been in the jails with her, on while financial coaching was going on. I mean, hear the prisoners talk about this. Like, I can't believe you guys are here doing this for us. I mean, that's the sort of thing that my wife is bringing to the table, along with the free tax preparation, all of this. So it's you have the ability to make a difference in people's lives. Some people say that the mayor's role is the highest elected office, where you can directly influence somebody's life on an individual basis. I think that's probably close to being true. And so we're trying to do that as much as we can throughout the city.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about his hopes for the city, his plans for the city. I'm going to try to attack. We're getting a lot of questions, so I'm going to try to attack them very, very quickly. This one comes from Lisa Lusby. Mayor Ballard, a healthy environment is increasingly important to be considered a world-class city. So what are you doing to help Indianapolis go green?
Well, we created the Office of Sustainability in October 2008. Unfortunately, the city really never had anything like that before on a citywide administration basis. So many things that we're trying to do, and it's going to take a few minutes to get through this, but you've certainly noticed the bike lanes. There's no question about that. You noticed an emphasis on rain gardens, which naturally filters water. In fact, Georgia Street is a naturally filtering area so that water will not go into our sewer system. You've seen an emphasis on urban gardens. We probably have over 200 right now in the city of Indianapolis. I issued an urban garden challenge last December for Center Township. I wanted to get at least 50 urban gardens in Center Township to work with these food deserts, to eliminate these food deserts in certain parts of Center Township. We've done that. We got last count, we had like 55 designated. 44 or 45 had been planted, so we're not, but the rest will be planted next year, so that's going on. We now have also a green building checklist, green building incentives, which we never had before. We now have a green checklist, which means every engineering project that the city does goes through a filtering of, can we put sustainability elements into the design? Never had that before. We retrofit 61 city county buildings for energy and water conservation. You may be surprised to learn that the city county building itself, which is about 50 years old, will soon be 50 years old, now has geothermal, wind, and solar energy elements to it, which is amazing. And that, some of these things could have been done before. But now we are doing all of this, and the Office of Sustainability is very, very strong. And you see this, and the enhanced mass transit is a piece of that also about, if we can get more people doing that, then we have fewer cars. So we're looking at the modes of transportation around the city also. In addition to, we're helping KIB plant a lot of trees, and everybody knows it's funny, when I was growing up, what we were taught was trees give you oxygen, okay, and that's right, and they do. But as the mayor, you find out very quickly there's a dual role, not only the oxygen piece, but they filter water really nicely. They soak up a lot of water, so it does not necessarily go into the sewer system. So we're working with KIB because we're helping them plant a lot of trees, and we're trying to make sure between the two of us to make sure they plant them in the places where they can soak up the best, the most amount of water also. So, I mean, there's so many, there's just a cultural change that's really gone on, certainly at the city level. I think some of the elements were there within different groups within the city, but now with the city administration coming alongside with the Office of Sustainability, I think we've kind of taken it to another level.
Getting a Facebook question says, with the recent controversy about historic preservation, a prefab restroom rehabbed for $200,000, does the mayor believe this was the right decision? How can we preserve our historic neighborhoods while respecting both our cultural heritage and the taxpayers?
But let's look at the bigger picture first before I get to that.
Okay.
We've invested $30 to $40 million in the parks, and I've been very open about this. Our parks were disgusting. They were horrible. We were leaking 35 million gallons of water out of our pools when we got into office. 35 million, and that's a 75-day year. We had people, and we held a press conference and say, hey, listen, we have to close these pools to fix them. There's so much short-term political pressure to open all the pools up on Memorial Day, and if you don't do that, people call you nasty names, and they certainly did that day. And it was not a pleasant experience, and it's not pleasant for somebody with my background to be called those names. And I'm just being honest with you here. But we had to do that to fix them. And now we have. All the pools are open. We have more spray parks than ever. They're beautiful. They're not good family gathering places. But, you know, for instance, I'll take Bethel Park. You know, we had to close that pool. That pool was horrible. Leaking. We were filling that pool up every other day. Every other day. The problem was, it wasn't just the pool, but the families in the area could not go hold picnics in the park because the park was wet all summer long with chlorinated water. So they couldn't even go there. I mean, that's what was happening in our city. That is not there anymore. We've cleaned all this up. The bathhouses were really particularly disgusting. Those are cleaned up. About half the tennis courts have been resurfaced so far, and I think the other half will be done by the end of next year. I believe by the end of next year. So we've really cleaned up the parks. We put rebuild any money into the infrastructure of the parks also. So the parks are completely changed. They are completely changed from what they were. And you just cannot argue otherwise because all the pools are in great shape. We have sustainable elements in them. We're heating some of the pools through solar methods. So all of that is happening. Now, this particular one that people have been making an issue of, I could show you two pages of police runs on it. It was unsanitary. We won't even talk about what was inside of it. It was unsanitary. It was unused. The only people who were using it were criminals. All right. It had no use whatsoever. And it just made sense. It just made sense. And it was not rehabable, and it just made sense.
We've gotten an email question from Christine Seitz, who says, where I live on the west side of Washington Township, there have been so many roads torn up and or closed for almost 2 years. So many road and sewer projects are going on at the same time. Why can't one project finish before another starts? The roads around my neighborhood are a mess, and every day it seems there are new and unexpected detours.
There is a lot of construction going on in the city, and we have asked people for their patience. Like I told you earlier in the show with the lane miles that we're doing and all that, but there's a lot of sewer work going on in that part of the city too. I live on the northwest side of town, so I know what she's talking about, but there's a lot, and that sewer work can be very, very complicated and can take a long time. So that's what this is. But I will also tell you the other side of that, and even though I apologize for the so much construction going on, I know it can disrupt some things, but people have been waiting decades for this road resurfacing. They've been waiting decades to get sidewalks and so many things that they've been waiting a long time for. And it becomes a public safety issue. I mean, when we have so many potholes in the spring, and I'm always afraid of, you know, somebody hitting a pothole and then curving off and, you know, creating a tragedy. I don't want those things to happen, so it was important to us to get as much done as we possibly could so that we have a smooth roads. And there's no, you know, the sidewalks are a public safety issue. I mean, you know, on the northwest side of town on Michigan Road, right, you know, I live pretty close to there. You know, we have elderly people in wheelchairs and with walkers in the street along with cars going 50 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. You can't have that. And you got to do something about that. And we have the capability to do something about that. I suggest that we have to do that in a fairly short order if we have the resources to do that. And that's what we've been doing. So we've been trying to get these things, and not only as a, you know, it's just to make it smoother for people to travel, but economic development purposes also, but also there's a public safety component to it also.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about his vision for the city. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Christine, welcome to the program. I understand you've got a question right on point here.
I do, and thank you very much for having me on. And Mayor Ballard, thank you for all of the infrastructure improvements that you have initiated and followed through on here in Indianapolis.
Thank you.
I specifically am concerned about sewage and drainage issues. I live in Franklin Township, and there have been problems here. I've been hearing that there are sewage and streets being redone in Washington Township. It sounds like there's a lot going on. Do you know the status of that, and how soon will things get wrapped up? You know, what's the time frame on being able to fix these problems?
Thanks for the question, Christine.
Now, the sewage and drainages are issues that will not be solved to quite the satisfaction for quite a while. This is going to take a while. This may be the last one. I'm not sure, but this
got one more. I definitely would like to.
You may know that we are, and there is flooding on the south side, and we've done a lot in Frog Hollow and Sten Court. We've had a great success stories, but unfortunately some of the development on the south side creates some of these issues, and we're trying to work through those issues. And for instance, we're trying to help the Wanamaker area down there in Franklin Township become more of a village-type atmosphere, but we have to address some drainage issues first, which should be next year. And then we can kind of help with the above-the-ground infrastructure. So those are the kind of priorities you have to get through first. We don't want to put something down and then have to cut it up for the drainage and all that. So. But the bigger issue, and people need to realize what's really going on, there are 700-plus cities in the nation going through a federal mandate from the EPA to clean up their waterways and to make things healthier within the city of Indianapolis, in their particular cities across the nation. Indianapolis is a part of that. That project was $1.9 billion when we came into office. It was originally about 1.6. There were some cost overruns. It was 1.9 when we got into office. My team kind of went to work on that and said, and told the EPA that, you know, we can do it bigger, faster, cheaper, and greener. We can be more environmentally sound, but we can save some money at the same time. And it was so we discussed this with the EPA, and it took over a year. We appreciate that. And so what that has done for us is it moves up cleaning up the sewage and the waterways much faster than it otherwise would have been by years. But it also saved the ratepayers $740 million, and that's a big number. It was one point. It's actually going to be more than that because the original bids came in lower than we thought. So it was $1.9 billion. Now it's going to be about $1.1 billion. So we've been able to do that, and we did it in a more environmentally sound manner, which is very special. As a result of this, by negotiating, we were the first city in the nation to do this. And as a result of that, I am now the co-chair of the Water Council at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, because Indianapolis now has the credibility to talk to the EPA and to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and I'm kind of that liaison between them to help out. And so it's been rather dramatic in what we've done. We've been the subject of two national magazines, one just this month, Public Works Magazine. The other one was Engineering News Record. This is a huge national story. Got no play locally, no controversy surrounding it probably, but a huge story nationally, and it's really positioned Indianapolis well as the player in sewage cleanup and that sort of thing across the nation.
We got a question from Smoke Free Indy just asking if compromise means that you now support a smoking ban for bars, taverns, nightclubs.
Well, it would depend on what the language said. We're 99% there now. I think people know that. Two thirds of the places that serve alcohol are smoke free now. But the compromise, there's always something there. But some of these advocacy groups want all or nothing, and same thing that happened at the State House. But locally, I think there's a compromise available in there. But I'm not sure I want to go to the Iwo Jima, telling the Iwo Jima veteran that he can't go down to his local post and smoke. But short of that, depending on what the language said, yeah, we can certainly talk about it. Absolutely.
Art, welcome to the program. Oop. Sounds like we have lost Art. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How are you? We've got about a minute left.
Okay. Actually, I was just wondering if Mayor Greg Ballard, if you have done anything or if there is anything out there to help parents get jobs. I'm a college graduate, have a bachelor's degree, and have not been able to find a job, been unemployed for 2 years, and I just exhausted my state benefits. I can't go out and find a job if I can't pay for daycare. Can't get on an assisting, the voucher list unless you have a job. So is there anything within the city that you have done or that is available for people like me to help us get jobs?
Thanks for the question, Kelly.
Yeah, there are different mechanisms. It's a tough market out there. I don't think there's much question about that. But I will tell you that, you know, our job commitments last year were off the charts compared to what they had been in the past. And when I say these are companies that are investing in Indianapolis, like Dow, like AIT, like ExactTarget, like Angie's List. I mean, the list goes on and on and on about people who are expanding within the city of Indianapolis. And I've had this question before. There's, I think, a good way to look at this. I mean, I'm sure you probably know that you have to connect up with some people and kind of have it, because just sending in resumes generally does not get you a job, but you have to connect up with certain people to make sure of that. But I also would suggest to you that follow our jobs announcements. I think that's very important. We'll have another big one coming up here shortly, but follow the jobs announcements in the paper when we announce things, and then go there, because when we have these job commitments, that means they're looking for people. They're looking for people. The other piece is to go to Employ Any, the workforce development folks here in the city of Indianapolis. They help with job training. They help with job skills type of thing to help you get a job. And that's the other folks, the Employ Any guys.
I'm afraid that will have to be the last word. Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard, thank you for coming back to the program and sitting down with us. It was a fast hour.
It was.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking with you. Good luck on Election Day. I said the same thing to your opponent. I don't want anyone to think I'm being partisan.
All right.
Here.
All right.
But we would love to have you back in any capacity.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Next week, we will be talking with some of the best writers in Indiana. We'll be celebrating the Indiana Authors Award. And you can join us next Thursday at noon here on WFYI. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. See you next week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m. And you can listen online at WFYI.org.